On the line from Pacifica, California, 15 miles south of San Francisco, the Bay Area, we have Bill Ryan. But you're actually an English person, right?
Jerry, that's right. I'm English. This is one of the minor weirdnesses of this particular episode. Many of your listeners who are used to hearing about discussion and revelations of UFO matters are used to hearing Americans who have been digging into these sorts of areas for many years. I'm a Brit. I'm proud to be so. I'm over here simply because my partner lives in California, and I'm going home on Monday, but I'm delighted to be part of your show.
And I know you're going to come back. You come back often to the States, and maybe one of these days we'll corner you for a personal interview as well.
I come and go. It would be a pleasure to talk to you guys.
And we certainly want to talk about that. You've had a 45-year interest in UFOs.
I've had a long interest in UFOs.
I don't know if it's 45. That's what Larry has. You're not that old, probably, but
I'm 52.
well.
I've been interested in UFOs for nearly as long as I can remember. I remember reading books about it at school, passed around in the back row when I was about 12 years old, looking at the photographs, thinking, wow, could those be real? So my interest has been that of what I would like to think as an intelligent layman, as you say. I'm trained in math and physics at a Bachelor of Science level. I've been a teacher for a few years, and after that I've been working primarily as a management consultant in team building and leadership training and executive coaching and areas like that. And so, unlike many people who do discuss these things on the air and at conferences, I've never written a book about UFOs. I'm not an active researcher. I'm never been in the intelligence services or the military or government circles on either side of the Atlantic. And I'm just an ordinary citizen in some ways. And for a variety of peculiar, through a variety of peculiar circumstances, I've ended up carrying this particular torch. And one reason for that is that, as I mentioned on the website, probably the best place to hide with something like this is out in the open. I know this from the experiences of Bob Lazar in the past. And while this information was made available to a comparatively large number of people in the first instances, it was disclosed on an email list that was about 120, 130 people large. Many of those people didn't want to put their names to anything in the public forum too quickly because they've got reputations to protect. They've got research which is ongoing and maybe of a sensitive nature. Some of these guys have still got links to the intelligence community, or they feel tied in some way that means that it's not that easy for them to come forward and start making bold statements. Because I'm a private citizen, and I thought, well, this sounds like an interesting one to me, and it's interesting enough to start letting a wider audience know about this. The most important thing I could do is create a website, which is what I did.
And that is an interesting website. We urge people to go over there to serpo.org. It's serpo.org. Let's continue with how you got interested in it. You were on this email list.
I was on an email list, which it's a fairly exclusive list, I guess I should say. When I say exclusive, I'm not meaning that it's in any way claiming to be highbrow, but its members contain, I would say, anyone who's anyone in the UFO world. There's people who turn up at the conferences, there are people who give lectures, there are people who you guys have probably spoken to and heard from many times. It contains anyone. It's like a veritable who's who of the ufological world.
Well, you're right. I was looking at one of those emails today, and you have quite an interesting list of people on there that I got from Victor.
There's a lot of people there, and I suspect that it's for that reason that this character, who from the start has called himself Anonymous, that's how he signs his messages, Anonymous, therefore that's what I'll call it now, that...
You don't have to tell me, but have you found out who he is?
I have absolutely no idea.
Okay.
I mean, I know that he's a retired official of the Defense Intelligence Agency, the DIA, but beyond that, I haven't got a clue. And I also don't need to know, and in a way, I don't want to know, because it means that if anyone puts the thumbscrews on me, I can tell them quite honestly that I don't know. I don't need to know. I'm really just playing the role of a messenger. I'm the guy who's happy to talk on the radio. I'm happy to maintain a website. I've got an intelligent interest in a lot of these issues, but there's a lot of inside information that, while I'm as curious about this as any of your listeners will be, I don't know the answers, and it might be best if I don't to a certain extent.
Yeah, I understand that. Now, this Victor Martinez, he's not anonymous. He knows Anonymous, right? Or he may not even know him, he may just be a contact.
I don't even know for sure.
Yeah.
Victor knows who Anonymous is.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
Just to go back to the history of all of this.
I think we need to bring all our listeners up to speed.
Exactly, this is the essential story. The email list is one that discusses all matters ufological. There are lists all over the internet to discuss cars, cooking, holidays, aeroplanes, whatever you want. And this is just a list that discusses anything to do with UFOs. And periodically there are sightings which occur, somebody writes a book, somebody gives a lecture, somebody gets a claim, and these things are discussed among fairly intelligent and fairly well-informed community. Now, I believe it's because this little community was pretty intelligent and pretty well informed. As I say, you've seen some of those names yourself. This is why this character decided to dispose in this particular list. And he started sending Victor Martinez these messages. And the first message was received, I believe, on the 2nd of November, which is only just 5 weeks ago. And it made an extraordinary claim. And the claim was so extraordinary that the only thing really that Victor could do with this was to post it to the list, especially as at the foot of his message, Anonymous said that he wanted to know what other people think of this. These were his words, "I'd like to know what others think of this." And then what happened was, within a very short time, three other people also posted short messages to the list saying, "I know about this. This is all for real. I never knew this would come out. This is extraordinary. Let's hear more." And then that really started to light a bushfire with the whole thing, because that encouraged Mr. Anonymous to keep on posting, and everyone just kind of leant forward on the edge of their seats. Since then, we've been having various revelations from Anonymous every few days.
When I first heard about it, it was on November 2nd. As I said, I was at the Crash Retrieval Conference, and someone picked up this email about it. And it's an alien exchange program. We sent 12 people to this planet, Serpo, and I guess they sent people here.
That's right. Now, one thing that many researchers will always do when new information surfaces is that they will naturally triangulate the information that is claimed against what is commonly accepted as a ufological consensus. Now, there are many things that will be understood and accepted by yourself and your listeners that aren't common currency in the wider world, but it's generally accepted that the Roswell crash happened. There may have been earlier ones, which are currently being researched, back in the early 40s. But Roswell really is like, that's when the starting gun went off. And I'm sure your listeners need no further comment about that.
Oh, sure.
What's commonly accepted is that there were a number of alien bodies that were recovered from that incident, and that one of them survived. One of them was a live alien, and in the documentation, he is known as EB, EBE, which stands for Extraterrestrial Biological Entity. And the story goes, and this is, as I say, this is accepted by most researchers, that he was held securely in captivity, not as a prisoner, but as a guest, as it were, between the years 1947 and 1952, when he died. And he was like the first guest, if you like. Now, after that, there have been several other guests. One of them was EBE-2, and he turned up, I think, in 1964 and stayed until 1984. He stayed for 20 years, if I've got my numbers right. And then there was EBE-3, who turned up in, I'm just looking at my information here. He turned up in the late 1980s, 1978, forgive me, I'm just looking at my information. EBE-3 turned up in 1978 and left in 1994. And so we've had three visitors, actually we've had five visitors, because the EBE-3 brought two aides with him, one of whom apparently was female, and Linda Howe and a lot of other researchers have commented on this at length. Dick Doty, in Rob Collins's book, Exempt from Disclosure, an interview with EBE-2 in at Los Alamos in 1983, which is really, really most interesting. And so that was...
Yeah, is that the one where he was seen at a meeting in a sports shirt? I've heard that story before.
No.
Okay.
That's a different character. This is J-Rod.
I mean, that's a J-Rod. Okay, so we're talking about EBE-3 and there were three of them at the last.
EBE-1, 2, and 3, and EBE-3 had a couple of aides. And so we've had five guests on our side of the exchange, as it were, and then opinions differ about J-Rod. Some people say that J-Rod is EBE-2 or maybe 3. Some people say that J-Rod is a different kind of entity, a different being altogether. But EBE-1, 2, and 3 were apparently members of this race that are called in Anonymous's postings the Ebens, E-B-E-N-S, and Ebens is just another word that derives from the term extraterrestrial biological entity, this time rather than EBE, it's E-B-E-N, extraterrestrial biological entity. And the story goes, according to Anonymous, that when EBE-2 came along, which was in 1964, and this is at another well-established event in ufological lore, which was the landing on April 24th, 1964, many researchers placed that at Holloman Air Force Base. Anonymous says it wasn't actually Holloman, it was west of Holloman at the southern entrance of the White Sands Army Post. This is a small detail, so we'll find all this kind of stuff on the website. And at that meeting, the exchange details were finalized. That's when EBE-2 was left behind. And a year later, an Eben craft landed, I believe, in Area 51 somewhere, and 12 U.S. military personnel who'd volunteered for the job, who were specially trained. In the military jargon, they were sheep-dipped, which means that they were set up to be erased out of the system as if they had disappeared, as if they had died. They had to have their identities cancelled in that kind of sense. This means that out of a large number of people who were considered for this post, it was whittled down to 12 because they couldn't have families, they couldn't have relatives, they had to be able to disappear, they had to want to do this thing in the first place, they had to be specialized. And Anonymous states that there were 10 men and 2 women who went on this trip. And the story goes that they were scheduled to go for 10 years, and because of pr- problems with calibrating time, and this is a very, very interesting component of the story, which is kind of detailed on the website. They didn't actually stay there for exactly the allotted time. They stayed for longer. They didn't come back for 13 years, and they rolled out back again in 1978. Only eight of them returned of the 12.
I understand two wanted to stay.
Two wanted to stay.
And they died natural causes up there, the other two?
That's what we're told. I think they, one of them died in an accident. As we speak, I can't quite remember how the other one died, but they died 3 years into the program. And two of them opted to stay, and eight of them returned. The two who opted to stay, according to Anonymous, they were not ordered to return. Those are his words. And the ongoing communication with this team of people while they were on SERPO, apparently, because EBE, who after the others arrived was then called EBE-1, he had a communication device with him. And it was through that communication device, it's some means of sending faster-than-light messages back to SERPO, that the whole exchange program was set up in the first place, and because of the existence of the device, the HQ on Earth were able to keep in touch with these personnel when they were on SERPO.
But before we go any further here, why don't we tell people where SERPO is? It's several light years from here.
Yeah, for sure. It's one of the planets, well...
There are two planets, I understand, twin planets or something.
It's a planet of one of the suns of Zeta Reticuli.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, many of your listeners will recognize that Zeta Reticuli comes up in...
Yeah, UFO folklore everywhere.
UFO folklore all the time. It actually started off with the abduction of Betty and Barney Hill.
Yes, uh-huh.
Betty Hill drew a star map, I think. And it was later identified as being Zeta Reticuli. And after that, Zeta Reticuli has kind of been right in there as you say, it's a cornerstone of the UFO folklore. Cynics may say that, okay, you know, any disinformation then is obviously going to be built around this Zeta Reticuli folklore. But nevertheless, acting as just a messenger, this is what Anonymous is saying. He's saying that this planet SERPO is a planet of Zeta Reticuli, which is a binary star. There's Zeta 1 and Zeta 2. It's an Earth-sized planet. It's almost exactly the same size as Earth. It's almost exactly the same distance away from its sun. And that whole system, that whole solar system, is just over 38 light years away. Ostensibly, they made this journey in 9 months, which is, I think that's about 50 or 60 times the speed of light. In a posting that we are hoping to get soon, our anonymous source is going to be giving us information about the physics of
I understand the physics there does not apply to what we think of as physics here, as far as theory.
This is what Anonymous is saying, and of course this really put the cat among the pigeons among the scientists of the group. The first thing that Anonymous did his best to explain in ways that I guess are naturally hard for us to understand is that he said that time doesn't operate in the same way. These are my words, not his. Because it's the river of time, the sense of the flow of time and measuring it with clocks and so on and so forth, it's something that's so deeply inbuilt into the way that we interact with the world that it's very hard to imagine how it could be different or how it could work in a different way. Anonymous has tried to explain that in some way time flow differently or work differently or was experienced differently in this other system. And this, of course, is not good news for the physicists because they start to think, how on earth could this be? Well, how on earth could this be? That's just kind of a joke. They start to wonder how this could be, and of course, there are no ready answers. The problems there are compounded by the fact that Anonymous provided detailed information about the orbit of Serpo, the supposed orbit of Serpo round its sun, in these reticuli. And many of your listeners will know that there is a physical law. In fact, there are three fundamental physical laws which are known as Kepler's laws, after the famous astronomer Johannes Kepler. And basically, it's a pretty simple equation in mathematical terms that says that if you know the mass of the sun and you know the period of the planet round the sun, which is like the year, this is the physical term for a year, it's called a period, the time it takes to get around. Then from that you can predict and deduce with absolute certainty the distance of the planet from the sun. And the numbers that Anonymous provided for Serpo don't fit the formula. And it seems as if Kepler's laws don't apply in the way that we would expect them to that alien solar system. Now, this is an anomaly, as it were, in the information provided by Anonymous. And this has caused a variety of reactions. It's really, really interesting. My own response to this is that you can go to your local bookstore and you can go to the science fiction shelf and you can buy well-written, well-researched stories by established science fiction writers that create believable, plausible, consistent worlds. The first thing they do is they just get a grad physics student to say, hey, look, just check out these numbers and make sure that they will work out, because I want to create a believable world here. It's like, if it was this big and it was, you know, this far from this kind of sun, then how long would the year be and how far would it be and so on and so forth. You know, would the sun be bright? You can work all these things out. It would have been very, very easy for a hoaxer to get those fundamental details correct. That's the first thing you'd expect them to do, is to try and be convincing about this kind of stuff. You don't want to start attracting ridicule by publishing numbers that don't add up. And yet, Anonymous was absolutely adamant. He provided us with a set of numbers that didn't fit the equations that we know. And for me, this is a clue that it may be genuine. This is the first indication I got that this is going to be genuine, because it's not going to be invented. A hoaxer would get it right. Therefore, he's not a hoaxer.
Yeah, good point. Let's talk a little bit about that planet, Serpo. Evidently, this group, if I understand correctly, they were closer to the equator at first and then moved north.
That's right. It was a warm planet, so we're told. The temperatures are ones that we would experience as being very tropical. We're told that the team had a pretty hard time there at the equator, but the Ebens, the race of aliens there, there's only one race. It's not like on our planet where there are a number of different races of different colors and origins. On Serpo there's one race, which is relatively small in number. And
there may be one race, but there's lots of strange living creatures there.
There are some strange living creatures.
Yeah, which we'll get into before the show's.
You bet. There's all. I mean, of course, on any planet, you've got a whole ecosystem there. And from an exterior viewpoint, from the viewpoint of visitors from another planet, everything's going to be strange. They find it pretty strange here as well. But the Ebens, who were a small population, only 650,000, which is a very, very, very small population for an Earth-sized planet. That was a significant interest. Our population on this planet, although it's overcrowded, is 1,000 times as big.
Yeah, and evidently they had a planned society, somewhat like China. In other words, you could only have certain children?
Yeah, it seems to be very well regulated, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Just to finish the earlier question, I'd be very happy to go on to the society from what I understand of it. Because the Ebens liked the warm climate, so they tended to congregate around the equator. However, the team found this pretty hard because it was really, really very hot and tropical by our Earth standards. And eventually they moved to the north, where there were very few Ebens, but which they felt much more at home because it had a much more Earth-type climate up there in the north. And we're told that that they explored the planet with the flying vehicles that were provided for them by the Eben. All of this sounds like an incredible story, but I mean, if you can get there in the first place, then everything else is going to be simple. You're assuming that these guys have got advanced physics and can travel anywhere on their planet with ease, and that's exactly what our team apparently did. They were given flying vehicles, which they learned to use within a couple of days. They all levitated off the ground. They're very simple to fly. And then they had a free run of the place. They were really welcomed and told that they could go anywhere they wanted to on the planet.
So it was not a secret like here?
Absolutely not. There was no attempt to hide them. They could travel anywhere they wanted to. The only thing, which was, it's just a little curiosity that I found really, really interesting. They were not permitted to photograph the Eben children. It's just one of those little touches that, once again, kind of rings true for me. You know, it's like, why not? Well, who knows? But we're talking about an alien culture here that had its values and principles, and for whatever reasons, they were politely, but apparently very firmly, requested not to photograph the Eben children, that they could go anywhere else they wanted to, and they could take any other photographs that they wanted.
Now, I understand, Bill Ryan, that there's some photographs expecting to be released in 06 by Anonymous, is that right?
That's what he said. In a recent posting that I put on the website just yesterday, he's saying that he's going to provide us with some photographs. And I haven't seen those photographs. As soon as they appear, they're going to go on the website, whatever they are. He says that, and I'm reading here from his message. He says, one photograph shows the entire team standing next to an Eben home, with several Ebens standing in the background. Another photograph shows the team's new home in the north. Another photograph shows an Eben village in the north. And most astonishingly, another photograph shows a group of Ebens who are playing a game that apparently had strange rules and lasted for quite a long time, but is best equated to the game of soccer. It was with some kind of a large ball, which, well, that's all I know. They were, you know, two teams of Ebens doing something with this large ball with quite complicated rules, and which was described by Anonymous as being like soccer. And if we have a photograph of that, that could be the photograph of the millennium.
Well, so two, as far as we know, are still there. I guess they're still alive. We don't know, do we?
I don't believe they are. This all happened in 1965. At least they left in 1965. They returned in 1978. The eight returnees have all died. The last one died in the Florida hospital in 2002. And we're told that because of the two suns that were in the sky of the Serpo planet, there was a higher level of radiation than there is here on Earth. And basically, during their 13-year stay there, the people who survived and made it back really experienced a lot of radiation, far more than anyone would on Earth during.
So they all passed away from cancer?
And they all passed away from various, or certainly most of them. I don't have that information at my fingertips, but they passed away from various radiation-related diseases, and therefore none of the returnees have lived to a ripe old age. And one would therefore expect that the two who died would also not have lived.
I wonder if the Ebens that came here suffered similar fates. Maybe not radiation poisoning, but maybe our atmosphere was hostile to them.
I really don't know, Jerry. It would be, I mean, this is just my personal guess as an observer of all of this, that I would imagine that any life form, when it's taken out of its environment to an alien planet, would find it having a little bit of a hard time there, because it's just not equipped for it.
Mm-hmm. Now, did they keep diaries or something? I mean, we seem to know a lot about, or at least Anonymous does.
Yeah. they did keep journals, which is entirely reasonable for that to have happened. We're also told by Anonymous that, and again I'm reading from his most recent posting, he says, my next posting of information will be the actual journal entries of one team member. Each team member is required to keep a journal. And the report which Anonymous is referencing when he's obtaining all this information for release is a 3,000-page highly classified document. 3,000 pages is a big report. That's one heck of a document. It would reasonably be expected to contain a lot of scientific analyses, every scrap of information, all the images that they brought back with them. And it's probably a document of some 500,000, maybe up to 1 million words. We've had something like 13,000 words from Anonymous so far. We've had about 2%, in fact, we haven't even had 2% of the information. The information posted so far by Anonymous is intending to give us a lot of information. There's absolutely no reason why he would stop. And we're hoping for more. My own position about this is, as I explained a little earlier, I'm being a messenger. I want to report the data accurately. I'm not making any personal claims. I'm not privy to any privileged information. Everything I know is on the site, from the site. And I'm just being a little bit of a public mouthpiece for this because Mr. Anonymous himself is in a position to come forward.
Now looking at your website and talking to others who have studied this, I mean, as you say, it's really only come to light since November.
Correct.
It seems to me the Ebens took the Earthlings on a something like a safari and showed them animals.
I guess that's what you would expect. If I was ever in a position to visit another planet, in my dreams, as it were, I would want to take a good look around. I'd be fascinated in the wildlife. I'd be fascinated in the ecology. I'd be fascinated in the geography. I'd be fascinated in the geology.
Are you sure? I mean, they ran across an armadillo-like creature who, I guess, really, just like the Ebens themselves, most of these animals weren't vicious at all.
Yeah, the Ebens themselves are very docile.
Mm-hmm.
That much we're told explicitly. They came across some animals that were like armadillos, that although the armadillos weren't overtly hostile, they used apparently some kind of a sonic weapon, at least this was provided by the Eben guide that they had, some kind of a sonic weapon like
a high-pitched noise that drive them away.
Something like that. We have similar things on this planet, you know. It's a pretty effective way of scaring off animals, and I guess it would work anywhere else too. And so that was one creature they encountered. They encountered another creature which they called the Beast, which they described as being like a large ox, but which was very docile. They encountered another animal which they called a mountain lion. I mean, of course, all of these are nicknames.
Sure.
Because in any unusual or alien environment, all people can do is relate them to the familiar things which they know already. The mountain lion, it had some kind of a long, shaggy coat, I think it was. But it wasn't dangerous, although we're told it looked quite impressive. They encountered a weird creature that was like a snake, but which kind of had a sort of human head, or something that kind of looked vaguely like a human head. And that snake, we're told, was, or snake-like creature, was 15 feet long and a foot and a half in diameter. They encountered that, and they killed it. We're told in the most recent posting that there were some insects they found that were a little like, they're small bugs similar to cockroaches. They were harmless, they had a hardened shell with a soft interior body.
But I understand there were no flying insects.
That's what we're told. We're told that they never observed any flying insects.
How about birds?
I don't believe there were any birds. There were, I mean, not like the the thousands of species, or tens of thousands of species that we have on this planet, there certainly doesn't seem to be a variety of species like the kind that that we enjoy here. They observed a couple of types of flying creatures. One was like a hawk, and the other one was like a large flying squirrel. We're told that neither of those was aggressive, and the team could never catch one for examination. And we're hoping for more information about all this in later postings, because everybody, of course, wants to know more according to their speciality. The biologists want to know more about the animals, the geologists want to know more about the geology, the physicists want to know more about the propulsion systems, the linguists want to know more about how they communicated. Everyone wants to know more, and we're getting a little bit of everything. We're just getting a little bit of everything at the moment, and what we can hope for is that each of these sets of tantalizing details is going to be expanded on in due course.
It's interesting to me that we no longer go there, and I assume they're not coming here.
I have absolutely no explanation for that at all. It's just information that we don't know about yet.
Well, now when we talk about all of this, I mean, this is pretty wild stuff.
It's wild stuff.
It's interesting, and the details, as you say, a lot of these things come out. They seem like you say, the inconsistencies. If you're making something up, you probably wouldn't have that. So you pretty much buy into this.
It's a two-edged sword. The private discussion that's been going on Victor Martinez's list has been fascinating. Everyone has been getting a couple hundred emails a day from everybody else saying, look, how about this and how about that? And everyone's got views and hypotheses and positions. Most people are taking this seriously. Most people are taking this seriously for reasons that I'll explain in a moment. The questions are obvious. There are all sorts of questions. For instance, we're told that this planet has a 43-degree tilt, which is quite a tilt for a planet. Now, it's the tilt that gives the planet its seasons, as most high school geography students will be able to tell you. However, this planet doesn't seem to have a variety of seasons. So even simple things like that present anomalies. I've already described the anomalies present in the Kepler's law predictions about the orbital data of the planet. It would seem that there should be more wildlife. You would expect there to be insects and birds, all kinds of animals, and fish, and what do the big animals live on. And it's easy to think of 100 questions, and everybody I know has got 100 questions. They've all got different questions from each other.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't seem to me that this expedition, for lack of a better term, with the 12, they probably didn't delve much into the even history of civilization, something like Western civilization, whatever, and they may not have gotten into philosophy and religion, or did they?
I don't know about philosophy so much. Apparently, they were told that they believe in a creator. We're told that they have visited the Earth for a couple of thousand years. Extraordinarily, we're told that they placed one of their own kind in human form on this planet a couple of thousand years ago. Now, that really puts the cat among the pigeons, because then everyone starts to speculate, you know, what or who this might be and whether it's true and what it means and so on and so forth. Interestingly enough, that information has also surfaced before in other briefing documents that are in the public domain, and your readers may know of some of those. We're told that the Ebens fought a 100-year war. This is 100 Earth years. A 100-year war with an enemy quite a long time ago, that ended up with the Ebens destroying their enemy's planet with some kind of particle beam weapon. You can imagine the scene out of Star Wars when something very similar happened. Of course, the skeptics say, well, of course, you know, this is where the guy in the story got it from. We're also told, which is another significant thing for me, that the Ibans, that this wasn't actually the Ibans' original home planet. It actually came from elsewhere. And one can then speculate, and this is purely speculation, that that Serpo was maybe terraformed in some way. Maybe this is why it hasn't got the variety of life that one would expect, because it hasn't evolved as a planet in quite the same way as planet Earth has. There are so many unanswered questions, and the impact of this in the discussion threads on the list I've been talking about, some people say, well, you know, this doesn't square up with everything that I would expect according to my discipline, my speciality, and therefore I'm really not convinced by this story. And other people are saying that a hoaxer would actually go to greater lengths to try and make the story fit with what people are expecting. And neither can really prove their case, as it were, but it's a really interesting debating point that's been going on for much of the last 4 or 5 weeks. The other thing that clinches it for me, when I say clinches it, let me say that I've just got a very strong feeling that there is fire behind the smoke, because there's a lot of smoke being created by this entire release that's been happening. We're told by the insiders on the list, people who have intelligence connections, government connections, insider connections. They've got friends who are, you know, who have inside knowledge in the various corridors of power. We're told that this is creating a stir. We're told that this is being taken seriously. I'd like to share with your listeners something that really made me sit up and really take notice of this. This happened, I guess, something like 10 days ago. There's one of the list members, I promise not to disclose his name, but he's a currently serving Lieutenant Colonel Air Force officer assigned to the Pentagon. Now, he had corresponded with me about a number of things over the previous couple of weeks, and I'd earmarked him as thorough and reliable and cautious and intelligent and exactly the kind of guy you would expect as per his rank and his assignation. What he did was he had a friend who had a father who he had known as a friend. This is the elderly guy, the father of his friend. He'd known him for 5 years. And this guy was a retired full colonel in the Air Force who had been in intelligence for 33 years. And this guy wasn't on the internet. He wasn't connected to email. He didn't know anything about the story. Like a number of senior people who you and I might know, he wasn't in the loop regarding stories that fly around on the web all the time. And my contact visited this friend of his, having printed out all of this information on paper. He gave it to this guy to read and watched his expression very, very carefully. And the guy, this is the retired intelligence officer, he was visibly shocked, and he said, "My God, how could they release information that's as classified as this?" And my contact said, "Is it real?" And the guy said, "Yes, it's all real." And it transpired that this guy had been involved in the Serpo project. He'd been involved in setting it up before they went, and he'd been involved in debriefing them when they came back. And this was an accidental encounter. This was not planned. It wasn't part of Anonymous's release plans. It was nothing that was orchestrated. It was something that could easily have gone the other way by contacting this colleague of his, this elderly retired colleague. The guy could have said, "Oh, you know, that's a lot of nonsense. I was in the loop during those years. Nothing like that happened." The guy visibly paled when he saw this information, and we've heard stories like that. That's the most dramatic that I've heard, which was reported to me personally. And I know this guy who reported it to me. he's on the level, he's as straight as a die. And for me, things like that really lend credence to the story in ways that otherwise it would be easy to dismiss. And it seems to be gathering momentum. It's being taken seriously. Questions are being asked. Everyone is picking up on this. I've been invited to do a lot of radio shows, more radio shows besides this. I've been invited to speak at a conference. I'm happy to do all this. I'm only the messenger. Because, as I said before, even if it turns out to be crazy, I'm happy to be wrong. This is a wild ride, and I'm very happy to be on the ride.
Let's talk seriously here for a minute. You attended Bristol University back in the early 70s. Your academic credits are impeccable. Did you ever think you'd be on the radio talking about life on a planet called Serpo?
Truth is stranger than fiction. I mean, if my guardian angel had flown through the window and said, hey, you know what, Bill, you'll be having this kind of conversation in 6 weeks' time, and they told me this at the end of October, I would have laughed them out of the house. This is nuts. It's like, what? How could I be doing something like this? And all I did, this is not about me. This is about the data. It's not really about any personalities at all. It's about the information. And ultimately, the information will stand or fall on its own merits, as the information should. I was talking to a very famous physicist just this morning. I was having coffee with him in San Francisco. We were discussing the scientific method, and the scientific method applies to this information just as it does to any other information. And what you do is you form hypotheses and you keep on collecting the information. And that's what I'm encouraging. This is what I'm standing for. I'm encouraging the careful and cautious examination of all of this. I'm not urging anyone to believe anything. I'm saying let's look at this with all the nuances that it contains, which are many. It needs to be read through a number of times. Most people who've been contacting me through the website are of the opinion that this is probably true. There are a lot of intelligent people who are giving this a great deal of thought. Maybe there's some disinformation in there for whatever purposes, but even, you see, on my website, in the index page, I list, just as a kind of logical aid, I say there are four possibilities. There are only four possibilities. The first possibility is that the guy is a prankster. He's a nut. This is all either invented or it's culled from other sources and is added to this wild novelistic story. Or, number two, he's operating to an agenda. This information is somehow distorted, but it contains a core of extraordinary truth. The third possibility is he's doing his best to report this data from an indirect source. Maybe he doesn't have access to the document. Maybe there are his personal notes, or he's being supplied information from somebody else, or somebody's memory, or whatever, but there's some accidental errors have crept in, and maybe there's some confusions have occurred. The fourth possibility is that everything is, he's reporting it faithfully and accurately as best as he can. And only the first possibility means that everything should be rejected. It's like even if only 10% of this was true, then we've got the story of the millennium. It doesn't even all have to be true. You know, even if a fraction of this is true, you've got something that would stay on the front page of the New York Times for a month. You know? And so, given the fire that seems to be behind the smoke, these extraordinary corroborations that have occurred, like the story I mentioned about this retired Air Force colonel who visibly blanched and said, this is all real, how could they release this information? Just having read it in the presence of this other guy, it suggests to me that we have to give this the credence that it deserves. Even if there's a small possibility that it's true, we've got to check it out. We can't throw this one out. We've got to see what happens next. We've got to encourage Anonymous to keep on posting. And let's have another conversation further down the line when we know more.
Yeah, we definitely will have another conversation. Our time's almost up right now. But you mentioned UFO conferences. Are you going to present this someplace?
Yeah, I heard a couple of days ago. I'm not a citizen of this country, so I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it right. It's in your neck of the woods, the Laughlin conference?
Yes, and I'll be there broadcasting, so we'll probably meet in person.
I've accepted an invitation to speak there. I think that's at the end of February, beginning of March.
Yes, at the UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada.
Very good. I've never even been to a UFO conference, let alone spoken at one, but I'm very happy to do that.
Well, we'll be set up there, and you'll see us, and we'll do more than one show on this, I'm sure.
That's wonderful.
So we'll see you in Laughlin, if not before.
Jerry, I look forward to that very much.
Okay, and we have a link to your website, and we urge people to check that out because you have no idea when these pictures will be there, huh?
We've just been told that they're on their way. Now, I don't know whether that means tomorrow or next week or next month or whether they're even waiting for me when I put the phone down. I just really don't know. Check out the website. It's serpo.org. And all the information is there, everything that I've done my best to describe here, and more, it's all there. You can contact me through a contact form. No one's able to...
And you answer that quickly, because we know our executive producer, Larry Dickin, wrote you, and you replied within an hour.
I'm now getting swamped. I think my response time is starting to freeze up a little.
Plus, you'll be traveling on Monday.
In particular, and... I would like to say this to anyone who's listening, that if you have any information that corroborates this story, even if it's something that you heard or something that you read in a document or something that was a conversation that you overheard in a military canteen 20 years ago or whatever, you can post this information on the contact form anonymously. We have no way of tracing who you are. Of course, if you do let us know who you are, we can get back to you and ask questions. But any information that is useful to us to corroborate the story, please let us have it.
Bill Ryan, I've enjoyed it.
Thank you, Jerry.
And we'll see you in Laughlin, Nevada. That's 100 miles south of Las Vegas at the end of February.
Very good. Thank you, Jerry.
Okay, talk to you later.